Welcome to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates. Glad to be back with you again today as we continue our week-long discussion on cultural diversity and children and teaching children about cultural diversity. So it's good to be back with you. Thanks to our underwriter, Concordia University, Wisconsin, for making this show a reality. If you'd like to find out more about Concordia University, Wisconsin, just go to our website, www.kfuoam.org, and then go to the sponsor section, click on Concordia University, Wisconsin, and that'll take you right to their page. Find all about all that they have to offer. And if you'd like to join the conversation today, you don't even know what we're talking about yet, do we? Today we're talking about our Native American friends, American Indians, and we'll be talking with our friends from Lutheran Indian Ministries today. And so if you'd like to join the conversation, you can do so as well. You can call us at 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727, or you can email us here in the studio as well at family@kfuo.org. Our guest today is Dr. Don Johnson from Lutheran Indian Ministries. Welcome, Dr. Johnson.
Well, it's good to be here this morning.
Thanks so much for spending some time with us. Now, it's still pretty early where you are. Is that right? Where are you located?
Well, I'm actually in your time zone.
Oh, good.
I'm currently residing in the Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul.
Okay, so we didn't have to wake you up too early today.
No, huh? You didn't.
Well, thanks for spending some time with us today. Looking forward to talking with you about our Native American friends, American Indian friends today. Well, week long, we've been talking about various cultures and really how to help parents through those embarrassing moments when little Johnny or little Janie says things like, "Mommy, that person looks different than us," or "He sounds funny when he talks." So we're going to find out how to make teachable moments out of those situations and learn about, we're learning about different cultures all week long, and really excited to have this opportunity to talk with you about our Native American friends and American Indians. So thanks so much for spending some time with us. So tell us about your background, Dr. Johnson.
Well, I come from the Macaw tribe. The original name for our people was the Quidditchat, which means literally people who live on the edge of the land where the birds gather. And that's way out on the Olympic Peninsula of Washington State. We're surrounded on three sides by water, the Pacific Ocean and the Strait of Juan de Fuca. So my people, in their language, would often use pictures to describe locations and even their own names sometimes.
So, in my experience, in my interaction with the history and the culture of Native Americans here in the Midwest would be very similar. That quite many of them used pictures as part of their language and passing on history. Would you say that that's pretty common with most of the folks that you work with in Lutheran Indian Ministries?
Yes, and we're often very gifted in terms of telling stories. When I preach, for example, one of the things that I had to recognize about myself is that thousands of years of genetic heritage in which my ancestors told stories to communicate truth sort of embedded itself in my DNA. And so I find when I preach, I do a much better job if I focus on the story and then tell a story to reveal the truth. So storytelling is very important. It passed on oral history from one family to the next, and that's how they preserve the knowledge of their history.
How did you come to know the good news of Jesus growing up? I'm gathering you grew up in the Macaw tribe. How did the gospel of Jesus get to you?
Well, when I was 14 years old, a set of circumstances forced us to move away from the reservation. And I was placed in a cultural setting where I was the only brown-skinned Native American in the school. And there was like hundreds of students, and here I felt very much alone. And during that time of aloneness, I started seeking for some way of finding some hope and comfort for my anxieties and fears of being so different. And of all things, I happened to be listening late at night to a radio station, and it was Billy Graham. And Billy Graham was in the midst of his popularity at the time, and I remember a few months later we happened to be going to the Seattle World's Fair in 1962, and Billy Graham was there for just one day. Just had an arrangement with the fair people that he would be there and he would speak about the 21st century. And I went and heard him speak. And as he spoke, the Holy Spirit grabbed hold of me and said, "You're not a Christian. You need to believe." And I went forward, and some guy prayed with me to receive Jesus. And that's the beginning of my Christian life.
So you heard about this Jesus. Was this the first time that you had ever heard about Jesus, the Messiah?
It was the first time that I heard a real clear definition of what it meant to be a Christian. Up to that time on the reservation, there were a number of churches there, and I would go mostly to Sunday school on my own, mostly to get the bulletins or to play with my friends at church on Sunday school. So I never really understood, although I must say I did hear Bible stories, familiar Bible stories, but most of the time I think we were distracting and somewhat disruptive in the classes, but it was fun, and that's why I went. So I never really got a clear picture of my relationship to God, that I needed Jesus as my Savior.
How are Christians viewed? How were Christians viewed among your tribe and maybe among other tribes too?
For the most part, I think in my community there wasn't any antagonism toward Christianity as such, but there was a sense that the church was trying to force us to change our culture. And so there was resistance, especially by the males, toward the church because they felt that the church was taking away their tendencies toward masculinity. And that came in the sense of, we don't want you to speak your language, you need to give up your old ways, you need to become like us. And a lot of times the message was coming from the feminine side of the church, meaning missionaries who were feminine, or women rather, and the men sort of reacted to that, and that made it a harder sell for Christianity.
Mm-hmm. What are the values of the Macaw people? Tell us about the culture and the values that the typical person in North America might not understand, or around the rest of the world, actually.
Well, first of all, you should know that that most Native American tribes were put under incredible pressure to set aside their values, to put them way behind them, to give them up altogether. They were forced to give, in many cases, give up their languages, their practices, their family traditions, and it was very disruptive. I can't put enough emphasis on that. So as I was growing up, I was looking at a world that had been vastly changed from the one that my ancestors knew. But one of the values, of course, is family. Tribe is all about keeping the family together. In my community, in 100 years before I was born, they were all living in longhouses. And they lived communally. In other words, the grandparents lived with their children and their children's children in these longhouses. And that kind of was the way they told story around campfires and around the family. There's a strong emphasis on family, and I think that value still holds today. There's also a great deal of respect for the elders and the stories they pass on, because much of our history is oral history and retained by the elders. They're held in high regard and respect. So when there are community functions such as what we would call a potlatch or a giveaway, a ceremony, it's the elders who are honored at that time and often are the first to be served. But they're also the ones who, as I said, are the storytellers, the ones who pass on history to the next generation. So that respect for the family and the elders and the tribe is a very powerful force in the community.
And so family, elders, definitely appreciation or respect for generation upon generation. What about for the, you know, as Christians, we understand things around us as what we would call first article gifts, the creation around us and all that God has created for us. How is that viewed? How is that valued in Native American culture?
Well, for Native people, they saw a unique connection between themselves and the natural world. Everything seemed to be circular, connected, cycles. The salmon returns every year, run up to the rivers, they die, and before they die, they spawn, and then the eggs hatch and go back out to the ocean, and they, as little fingerlings, and they become salmon, big adult salmon, and they come, and it's a cycle, seasons. Everything moves in seasons. And so they saw the kind of, like there was a unity in everything in its creation, the God's creation. And they believed the Great Spirit had created this unity, and that when one part of it becomes dysfunctional, then it affects the whole. So there was a real sense of the balance of things. So that my people were whale hunters, and before they would go and take a single whale, they always went through a religious ceremony of purification, which they would bathe, and they would prepare themselves early in the morning for a period of time before they would ever attempt to go and hunt a whale. They believed the whale was giving itself for the community, for the tribe. And when you looked at the values that the whale brought to the tribe, you can see they used every part of it for some aspect of their life. Not only was the whale providing food, but the bones provided implements, and it provided even in some cases the larger bones could provide a drainage for the amount of rain that we had. So there was never a piece that was wasted. So everything was loaned to us. Everything was to be respected. That was more the sense I have of our culture.
You've mentioned the Great Spirit. What is the understanding of the Great Spirit or the religious understanding of God or who they refer to as God?
Well, they would have a sense that there was spirits, and there were various created spirits, and they operated. There was never a question among the native people of any culture that I've ever seen that didn't recognize the spirit world. And so the native people everywhere I've ever gone have had a natural affinity. When you talk about the Great Spirit or the spirit world, they know, they don't even question whether that exists. Mm-hmm. They do know there's also a one great creator over all things. And they differed in what they called him, but it always meant the same thing. This is the one who is ultimately the creator of everything, and we owe our obligation and obedience to him.
You've mentioned community several times, that everything was for the benefit of the community, even the understanding that the whale was giving itself up for the benefit of the community. What can we learn? What can we learn today from that? Even those who are not Native Americans, what can we learn from that understanding of community?
Well, I think we would all agree that something has dramatically changed in the world of today compared to what once was, not only for Native Americans, but probably for everybody. We're moving fast today. People have to, in order to afford their family lives, oftentimes husband and wife work, there's appointments and schedules, and we're driven to get here and there, and it leaves very little time for family. In addition to that, we've had technologies that, particularly I would say the television and things like that, that multiple channels, all of a sudden we have people entertaining themselves rather than working together in family, and so we're getting separated more and more, plus the stresses of our present-day life and the demands, and all the events happening around us seems to be tearing away family and tribe. And so I think what the Native people have tried to preserve is how to keep that together in the midst of many changes.
And family is very much so the core of our culture, who we are as Americans and in other cultures around the world as well. And today we're facing the question of what is the definition of marriage. And as Christians, we have a pretty clear understanding, a clear definition of what that is. But the rest of the world is defining, trying to redefine what marriage is, what is husband and wife. Mm-hmm. What's the Native American understanding of family, of husband and wife? And I know that extended family is certainly important. What's the understanding of the husband and wife relationship?
It's more in the traditional biblical form. One man, one woman constitute the marriage relationship. And so in all of the tribes that I've ever been around, that's been pretty well the understanding. I think what we're seeing today with the changing morality, the moral code seems to have really been affected by the rapid changes around us. I think what's happening is all of the information that we have coming at us at exponential speed and the technologies that enable us to endeavor to do things that we never would have thought of before. Technology in sense and not only expands our capabilities, but it also serves to expedite our capacity for sin. And when it does that, it erodes our moral commitments, and we start to become more dysfunctional morally. Mm-hmm. And as more and more people lose their core values, and it becomes more and more part of our community, then we question God's value for us. In fact, God becomes uncomfortable to even have as part of our life because, I mean, he stands against all of that. So we lose the awe of God in all of this. And that's one of my biggest concerns is that we've lost, in a sense, the awe of God because he doesn't seem relevant to us anymore.
We as humans take the very gifts that have been placed, the gifts that have been placed around us in this world with science and technology and all that has been entrusted to us, and not only use them as they were intended, but also go far beyond that and use them as they were unintended to really separate ourselves from God even further sin.
Because it accelerates the consequences of bad decisions. That's one of the things, and it amplifies. I mean, you do one indiscretion somewhere, and it's on YouTube the next day, and it's around the world. Mm-hmm. And we see that, and then we see what uses good inventions can be put to. And that's really why I think, you know, when you go back to the Tower of Babel and you see that God confounded the languages of the people at that time, what you were seeing there was a very highly technical culture beginning to, as God said, there's nothing they can imagine to do that they cannot do. Let us go and scatter them and, you know, change their languages. So one of the reasons for cultural diversity, in at least in that context, was so they won't accelerate events in the world because of the technology they'll build. And so you can see what God's reason for that, but at the same time you can see that in our day there are no restraints. And we are seeing the consequences of that.
Because of the technology we have, we can have knowledge of what's going on the other side of the world within seconds.
And that's disturbing because we're bombarded with it. And I think that's what's part of the problem is that we're able to bring every crisis right into the living room every single day and bombard our families with it, ourselves with it, and it's easy to get caught up in the dark side of it and suddenly say, gee, I don't see God anywhere in the world.
Right.
What's going to happen? And actually, that was part of my original fear that led me to listen to Billy Graham was I started to already become aware that the world is an insane place, and I don't think it's going to last. And when Billy Graham preached about Jesus Christ as the answer to all of that, that's what really drove me to him. So I think you can take that also and use it as a means of good, and it can be a motivation to trust in Jesus when you see all these kinds of things.
Absolutely. Great example, worldwide KFUO, the opportunity to tell the good news about Jesus. And not just, you know, we started off as an AM station here in St. Louis, but now we're worldwide streaming on the internet. So having the opportunity to share what we're sharing today, to tell about the good news about Jesus all over the world certainly can be a good gift. But I see your point very well, that technology that we have today can also really amplify and accelerate the sin that so easily entangles us, and something our sin can be plastered all over the internet, and you're right, ends up instantly almost on into the hands and eyes and ears of others very quickly.
Yeah, and I think that's really what part of what is affecting us, and you know, we know that generational culture in generations changes rather quickly, partly because they're exposed to so much in such a short period of time. I'm a baby boomer, and so my generation is listed as beginning in 47 through 63, but the present new generation today is probably formed in 3 to 5 years.
Wow.
You know, it's that short. And why is it that way? Because the people of today, young people today and generations today are exposed to so much, and they're traumatizing. It can be an event around the world. It could be a war. It could be a terrific event in nature. All of those things have an impact on us and affect what we believe and what our core values are.
And let's go back to our Native American friends. Are they equally as exposed to all this? Are there still groups that are somewhat removed from, I guess, mainstream culture or, you know, North American culture in general?
I would say that in North America, most of the Native people that I've ever met, whether they're isolated communities in northern Canada or Alaska, when you go into these villages, one of the first things you may see is a satellite receiver. And what that means is that people are watching the same things on television that you and I are, way up in these northern communities. So that is one of the larger impacts on the local area culture. So we're all impacted by that. So I haven't been able to find places that, in fact, when I wrote a book, I talked about when I was a kid growing up, we were a pretty close community. And not only we'd have our tribal culture and traditions that we held us together, but one of the big change agents in our community was a road out of town that they built, and the second thing was the introduction of television and automobiles. Now all of a sudden our little community of tribal people were being able to leave and not come back, or exposed to new information media that changed the way they saw things. So, you know, you can see good and bad in all of that, but on its negative side, it can have the effect on the family.
Absolutely. It takes me back to my early college days during the summer working at summer camp and thinking, you know, there were, yes, we had technology there, but there were several summers that I didn't have time or, you know, immediate access to TV or radio or internet and things like that. And really was out of touch with what was going on around the rest of the world. And at times thinking, wow, this is really nice because I'm not being bombarded with all the bad news that's going on. You know, that doesn't mean that the bad things aren't happening around the world, but it was nice to not be bombarded with it all the time. But yet at the same time, I would come back from a summer and later learn about all the things that had gone on that summer and how out of touch I was with what was going on in the rest of the world. And so I felt kind of clueless at the same time.
Well, yeah, and that's right. And there is something I'd like to say a little bit about the diversity part of it. I mean, this is the natural consequence of human events. I don't think there's nobody that could have ever said, well, why can't we go back to a different time when life was more simple? You just can't do that. The genie's out of the bottle. Life is changing. It always will. You can't stop it. The only question I have is, okay, then, God, what can we do? And the answer is, of course, I think we need to hold to our core values. We need to rebuild the family. We need, and churches can certainly do this, and they do this. But I will add this in terms of diversity, and this is maybe getting back to one of your questions about Native Americans. I believe that, and I think this is biblical, that every people group that God has created is uniquely gifted and talented, and bring something to the understanding of one another that we can use to be a blessing to one another. For example, there's a very interesting text in Acts 17, 26 and 27 where the author explains that, Paul talks about the purposes. God has determined the times and places and the boundaries where you should live. He did this before all eternity. He determined where you would live, where you and I would live, and we're living here today for a reason, an appointed time. The fact that I'm Native American and you might be a German heritage or whatever, I don't know what your heritage is, but you and I bring something uniquely from our own cultures and experience and tradition that is to be a blessing. Because the end result of that is that God did this so that we might recognize him as, you know, as God, as we would be a blessing to each other. We might experience him and find him. So my Native American culture teaches me about God, respect for creation, It teaches me about respect for family. It teaches me about the importance of oral story. It teaches me about working together. And I need to learn how to give that to my brethren who are of another culture, and they can give me what they have out of their own experiences. So I think this diversity that we have, even though we're different in skin tone, we do have a good reason for being together.
Absolutely.
And God's purpose is that we would be a blessing, and ultimately that we would experience the grace of God and affirm His glory. I think that's why we're here.
All good points.
And I really affirm the diversity element of God's creation.
All good points. And we'll pick up with that right after the break. We're going to come back right after the break.
Mequon, Wisconsin overlooks the beautiful shoreline of Lake Michigan. This serene main campus of CUW is just 15 miles north of Milwaukee with all its vibrant cultural attractions. At Concordia University, Wisconsin, students living by the motto of inspiration and action can choose from 69 undergraduate majors, 14 master degree programs, and doctorates in pharmacy, physical therapy, and nursing practice. For more information or to take a virtual tour, visit cuw.edu.
This is Life Issues with Brad Mattis, Executive Director of Life Issues Institute.
If I believed in cloning, I'd make more of OB Dr. Andrew Jaja at Maggie Women's Hospital in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. Before retiring, Dr. Jaja's mentor passed to him the responsibility of carrying on a very special tradition. After the birth of every baby, Dr. Jaja and his staff sing Happy Birthday to the newborn. Everyone isn't necessarily singing on key, but it's a heartfelt welcome just the same. Clearly, he cherishes each life he brings into the breathing world. Just imagine if every doctor treated each birth as a blessing regardless of circumstances. Visit today's broadcast link at lifeissues.org to see a brief video on Dr. Jaja. He's proof little things make a big difference.
Life Issues. Stay informed. More informed than you've ever been.
Did you know that you can support KFUO Radio with your Thrivent Choice dollars? Thrivent Choice lets you recommend where some of Thrivent Financial's charitable outreach funds go by directing your choice dollars. Call 800-847-4836 and say Thrivent Choice, or visit thrivent.com/choicedollars for information on how you can support KFUO Radio with your choice dollars.
Has your congregation's church attendance been in decline? Why do you think that is so, if it is? On the next Ruminations Thursday broadcast with our co-host, the Reverend Wes Reimnitz, we will not only talk about declining church attendance, but offer some strategies to increase that attendance.
Weekdays at 2 p.m. on KFUO, the messenger of good news.
If you have a question or comment for us at Worldwide KFUO, it's easy to contact us on our website, kfuoam.org. On our homepage, click on Contact Us, where you'll find a map and directions to the station, our telephone numbers, and an online contact form. You can also send an email to our in-studio account, kfuo@kfuo.org. We'd be happy to hear from you today. Thanks for listening to Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.
The nation's largest Lutheran denomination has elected its first woman as presiding bishop. The Reverend Elizabeth Eaton of Ohio will be the new leader of the Evangelical Lutheran Church in America, which has lost members since 2009 when it cleared the way for partnered gays and lesbians to be ordained. But she maintains,
"We're not defined by that single issue."
Entire denominations have been formed by congregations that have left the ELCA.
The manner in which those denominations were formed has been extremely painful to our church, and it's not going to be something that can be quickly forgotten.
But Eaton said she still hopes to heal the divisions.
We're supposed to love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us, and since these are actually brothers and sisters, well, you know, families might be tougher than enemies, but we'll do what we can.
Elizabeth Eaton defeated Evangelical Lutheran Presiding Bishop Mark Hansen, who's finishing his second six-year term. I'm Steve Coleman.
Welcome back to Faith and Family. I'm your host, Andy Bates, and today we are talking with Dr. Don Johnson of Lutheran Indian Ministries about Native American culture. And if you'd like to join the conversation today, you can do so at 314-821-0850 or 1-800-730-2727. Thanks so much for hanging in there with me, Dr. Johnson. Sorry we had to go so quickly to our break, but before the break, we were talking about the diversity of gifts and the variety of gifts that come from various people among various cultures and how those can be a benefit. Any more that you'd like to share with us about that?
Well, maybe just a little bit about the concept of Native time. I told you that for many Native American people, the circle becomes a symbol of the unity of all things and the interconnectedness of all things. All creation is connected in circles, cycles, and seasons. And it does reflect how they also view time, because time for Native people was never segmented into minutes or seconds, minutes, hours in that way. They were more likely to shape their lives in rhythm with the natural world, so that celebrations and seasonal hunting events or fishing activities or celebrations were always in connection with the seasons and the cycles of the natural world. So it built over thousands of years a sense of enough time for things. Friendships were required time to build. There was no pressure to get on to the next thing. Family relationships took time to build the core values. It wasn't segmented into small sections where you teach this at this time and we move on to something else. It was more infused into the whole of life. And I think if you look at the development of the modern clock and the computer, they're all kind of connected. Once we began to segment time the ultimate purpose of the creation of clock time was to manage nature. Where, in other words, if you could control every single day, and manage every single day, you could improve production, innovate more things, you get everybody working on the same schedule. But its ultimate purpose was to break free from the cycles of the seasons, to break away, in a sense, from the natural world. And so that is what distinguishes, in a sense, the traditional Native view, is because they wanted to stay in connection with the natural world, stay in sync with it, not to master it. And I think that somewhere in that whole context, there's value on both sides of that type of time, but they have to be blended in a way that we don't become unhealthy.
That's a very different approach to time and seasons than the approach that I certainly grew up in. The fact that today I can eat any kind of fruit any time of the year, or any kind of vegetables any time of the year. Mm-hmm. That's so vastly different, and granted, much of that comes from technology, as you said, our understanding of time and what we've done with time and clocks and other structures, other inventions and technology to manage the seasons, to manage time, and nature itself.
Yeah, it's in part. I remember one time my wife and I went to some kind of resort. It was like a bed and breakfast, and the lady who ran the bed and breakfast had this little plaque on the wall that said, "Once there was time." And what she was really, and if in her particular bed and breakfast, there was no TV, there was no radio, there was nothing in it. She said, "I don't even want you to have a computer here," and which bothers me, because I'm actually, even though I recognize this whole question of time and how it differs in cultures, I always like to get my work done even when I'm not supposed to. And she prevented me from doing that, which was really good. She said, once there was time, meaning we have time for one another. We took the time to build the core values. We took the time to pass on the stories. And I think that remains and still is the core difference, I think, that Native people bring into understanding. And I'm not just saying Native Americans. I think there's, across the world, there's groups of people that still value those kinds of core values.
Talking about time and seasons and things having, even as scripture says, everything has its appropriate time or appropriate season. What are some of the things that accompany various seasons in Native American culture? What are maybe some of the traditions that your family held? What are what are the things that are associated specifically with certain seasons?
Well, for the macaw on the northwest coast of Washington, it's a climate that sort of shapes everything. In other words, the time of the year for the pursuit of the whale was always in the springtime, when the whales were migrating, or the sea lions or the seals. They were very, very good seamen. They were very good at seamanship and using cedar logs to create these large ocean-going canoes. So there was a season for everything they did. And the wintertime was more of a time for living off the provisions of the beaches and the oceans that were around them, where you could get the clams and the crab and all the seafood. But it was also a time where the weather was such and the storms were such that it was better just to be close to the village. And those were the times for the storytelling and the ceremonies. A lot of times they would have what they call a potlatch festival, which was like a chief inviting villagers from other tribes to come and share in a celebration of the giving of a name or some important occasion. And the chief would spend 2 years preparing for this, and then he would distribute gifts to all those people who came. And in fact, the name Macaw literally meant generosity, as an expression of giving away food and gifts. That's what the word meant. It was a hospitality term.
Mm-hmm.
And so they were givers, and they wanted to share things with other people. And that's a value that came from my tribe. So there were times and seasons where they would do this. And oftentimes the winter months being as dark and rainy as they often were, those were good times for those kinds of ceremonies. Springtime, summer, we're out on the ocean, we have fishing camps, we go out and do those things.
You mentioned giving of a name. Was that giving of a name to a person?
Oftentimes, yeah, it was. I mean, I got the name when I was a part of my tribe. They gave me the name Owixtos, which when I asked one of the elders what it meant, she said, well, it means first one on the beach. Well, I like that. I like that idea. You know, because coming from that culture, getting up early, you know, you harvest early, you know, the early bird gets the worm kind of idea. That's what I kind of took from that name. But it was announced at a party, an Indian potlatch kind of party, and they called me forward and they said, the elder in the community who was related to me said, I want Don Johnson to have this name. And she gave it to me. It is my name. And my task as the person who received the name was to know where it came from. And I found out from talking to this elder, who is my relative, that it came from a distant relative of mine. And my job was to respect that name and to honor it and to not do anything that would discredit that honorable name. So how I lived my life is how I honored that name. And I thought to myself, wow, that's a lot like being a Christian. We're given the name Christian. How do we live our lives to honor the person who gave us his name,
mm-hmm.
Jesus? How do we honor him by living our lives? So it's interesting to see the connections that Native people would put to a name. You're to polish it by the way you live. You're to show the respect for that name. So someday that same name that I have can be given on to a relative of mine. And they will be asked to honor that name by the way they live.
So the naming, the giving of a name, that could happen at any, it could be when you're young, when you're older, it could happen at any point in life?
It can. It's typically done, and I had been away from my community a long time, so they did it when I was an adult. And by the way, when they did give me that name, the elder got up and said, this is who this person was that he gets his name from. And this is how he's related to us in our community. So the name you get attaches yourself to some history in the community so that people know who you are in terms of relationships. Family is all important. So the family connections you have help for people to understand your place. At the time, I had been elected as the chief of the tribe. And there were a few people apparently who were complaining about, well, he shouldn't be the chief because he doesn't come from the right family. It's type of tribal kind of behavior that goes on. But this name was a way of silencing the critics and saying, no, he comes from this family, it's our family, and basically leave him alone because he's an honored member of our tribe. And I was thinking of how in the Bible it says, I have given you a new name. Jesus gives us a new name, and that name is connected to our eternal relationship with him and the rightness we have to be in as part of his family and inheritors of the kingdom. So, in other words, Native people in their traditional ways actually reflect many biblical values.
How do you... There certainly is... You've pointed out some very clear similarities between some of the customs of Native Americans and what we believe and teach and confess as Christians. How do you go about telling this good news about Jesus to the Native American community? Is it something you can do just openly, or is it something that you need to be? How do you approach that topic?
Well, it always depends on where the Holy Spirit has already taken people that you're talking to.
Sure.
I've been talking to a Native man who lives in my area, and he's a very nice man. I mean, I really like him. But he's fanatically committed to holding on to Native tradition and religion. And he believes that Christianity was a bad thing for his people. And although he accepts me and is willing to talk to me, I know that he's not, at this point, very open to my faith in Jesus. Although he's read my book, Broken Parts, Missing Pieces, a book I wrote, and it's clearly an affirmation of Jesus in my life. He has seen that. So I have to be very careful when I'm talking to each person. They're all different. If they were like me when I was a young teenager becoming a Christian, I wasn't hung up on what happened to Native people through the gospel. I wasn't caught up in the past history. I was just looking for someone to bring peace to my restless soul. And sometimes I run into Native people. That's where they are. Other times it'll be like this fellow I'm talking about. He's got walls all over the place. And I don't know why he has walls. I do know some of it is because of personal tragedy. Mm-hmm. And he's built walls based on a loss of a daughter. He was an alcoholic one time. I mean, he grew up in a difficult part of Chicago. I mean, he has a lot of things going against him, and Christianity does not fit what he thinks will help him at this point. But at least I can plant seed. So in some cases, all we're doing is planting seed. But you carefully assess, who am I talking to? What are they carrying that I'm not sure of? What do I not know about these people before I tell them my truth? They're not open right now, I can tell that. So I just want to keep them on a good, keep a good relationship with them so I can share a bit at a time.
And that's true of anyone, not just, obviously, yeah, not just Native Americans, but anyone. And what is their past as you go to, as you approach and consider telling them the good news about Jesus and telling them the truth of God's word, are seriously considering, do you bring the law? Do you bring the gospel? Right. What do you bring? Do you tell that?
I've learned to understand that everybody I meet is fighting some kind of internal battle.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know what it is. I don't know what their heritage or the background is, but I do know that God knows what it is, and God loves them and cares about them. I think of the woman at the well in Cana, where she was Jacob's well. She was married to five different husbands, and she was living with somebody else. I don't know what brought her to that point, but I can bet that in her childhood she went through some terrible traumas that led her to this place. And so when I meet with people, I don't know where they've been or what has been their experience, but I try to assess them and understand that God has a different knowledge of them than I do, and I just want to try to be on God's frequency so that I don't say too much or I say enough that what he would have me say to them. And it's always a challenge for me to be in that place.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Hoping that you, and praying that you'll be the work of God's hands, really the masks of God, in a sense, to tell what it is he would have you tell and serve in the ways that he would have you serve. That's the struggle of the Christian life. I'd like to talk a little bit more about Native Americans in North America. We've talked a little bit about we talked about the Macaw tribe and where they are, and there are obviously tribes all over North America. But there are also Native Americans who live, some who live on reservations, certainly many who live off of reservations.
Right.
What's the difference between living life on a reservation, life off of a reservation for a Native American today?
Well, if you live on a reservation, you obviously have identity with your tribe, and you know who your people are, you know who your people group is, so there's, in some sense, an affirmation that I'm a Native American from this tribe. But quite often, in most experiences, the reservation is also a place of poverty and struggle, and the people are unemployed. Many of the men are unemployed, and that breeds all kinds of issues. And as I wrote in my book, I grew up in a family where alcohol played a large part in the disruption of our family life. And that was what God was calling me out of. He was calling me out of this situation to heal me and to begin to use my life in a meaningful way. So I know many of the Native people that live on reservations grow up with poor education, often subject to families that are broken and have alcoholism as part of it, and more recent years, drug addictions and stuff like that. And that usually is accompanied by spousal addiction or spousal abuse and problems for children of all kinds. So that unfortunately is very representative of many of the reservations. Not all, but many. And it depends on the leadership and the cohesiveness of the community and how well they've been able to preserve themselves under enormous stress. How much education has come in to help them to change things, how they've improved their quality of life through economic developments. All those things are part of the mix. But if you're brought up off the reservation, let's say you were adopted out or your family left, as mine did later years, you're now in a culturally diverse area, and you may not know who your people group you came from, who they were or what they believed or what they taught. And so that gives you kind of a sense of, well, I don't know who I am. And I think a lot of Native people who are raised in an urban setting, and there are quite a few, struggle to know what it means to be Native. And so sometimes what they will do is, after they have gotten older and they've struggled with identity issues, they'll go back and try to find their tribe and try to learn of their culture, their language, and their traditions. To try to find a sense of belonging, I would say.
And I could see that in any culture when we live in the United States, this big giant melting pot or tossed salad, however you want to see it, where especially in adolescence, growing up and trying to figure out who we are, what culture we identify with, where we come from, all those things and then add to that all the biological things that are going on that make us confused at that time too. So I can see how that could be really a part of any young person or really at any age, if we feel like we just don't know where we come from and who we are. And what a blessing to have that identity in Christ, even when we struggle with where we come from in this world and in this life, to know that our eternal identity is in Christ.
Ultimately, that was a profound insight for me. Once I became a Christian, I realized I'd become part of a new tribe, and that I had a new destiny, and I had an eternal existence because of what Jesus had done for me. And so I identified with that picture in the book of Revelations, where all the people of the earth are gathered before God, before the throne of God, and it's a diversity of people from many different languages and cultures. They're all together giving Him praise and honor. That's my tribe,
mm-hmm.
And that's where I come from. That's who I belong to, ultimately. At the same time, I'm still part of the Macaw people, and I'm proud of the membership I have in the tribe, and I respect and honor the history and tradition that they went through, that God allowed them to go through, and I can see the God hand in their lives, even in spite of all the difficulties they've had. They were survivors, and that's probably another value that a people group like mine bring, is that we have been under enormous pressure for the last, if you go back to Columbus, 500 years, to survive amidst a whole lot of powerful forces for change that came our way. And somehow, by the grace of God, we managed to survive, and many of us even to become believers in Him. So this is another value, I think, in the midst of a changing world where there's enormous pressures, that we can still survive and God can be with us in the midst of all of our trials.
It is good to see the hand of providence at work like that.
Exactly. And I think that's one of the things growing up on the reservation as I did, with a lot of poverty and a lot of sadness that I saw growing up. I now have, as a contrast to that, seeing how God is able to take very difficult things, very dark things even in my own life, and transform them for good.
Mm-hmm.
I have no doubt about God's power to change things or transform things. And that creates in me a sense of God. I know who He is. I know He's powerful. I know that He reaches into places that you wouldn't think He could do, and He changes people's lives.
You've mentioned the realities of, in a very real way, you've described Native Americans, especially the Macaw tribe, for us today. And we've talked about technology and media and how that is so instantaneous today, and we can get information from anywhere in the world at any time. Would you say, especially in movies and TV, are Native Americans depicted accurately? Obviously, in movies, and that's kind of a broad question, but when our goal this week is to help children understand, help parents and children understand cultural diversity in various people groups. When a child sees a Native American on TV, is that quite often really far-fetched, or is it quite often fair?
Well, I think, what is the saying? When the victors of any conflict have the privilege of telling the story the way they see it. For Native Americans, especially during the early days of Hollywood in the 30s and the 40s, the Native Americans were always pictured as savage people who seemed nameless but always attacking innocent people.
Mm-hmm.
And the context of what Native people were experiencing was often left out, so that you were left with a very bad picture for Native people. And we saw that, and we watched that all the years that we were growing up as children. And I think it made it hard for us to understand and respect the world around us, because we were given these images of ourselves as such a negative thing. But I think, fortunately, in recent years, and I would say probably one of the biggest movies I remember seeing was Dustin Hoffman in something called Little Big Man, where he's taken in by this Indian tribe and he becomes Indian. But in the telling of that particular story, you see the side of Indian people as real people, as real families,
mm-hmm.
under a lot of duress and struggling with a lot of things.
We've only got
And that was the beginning, and there have been much better portrayals in recent years.
Got about 20 seconds left here. About 20 seconds left. Sorry to wrap it up so quickly.
Oh, sure.
Go ahead.
But that's it. I mean, I think there's a better picture of Native people today than there has been.
So the media doesn't always depict it accurately, but it certainly does provide opportunities for conversations, I would say.
Yeah, I would say more so. I think there needs to be more done to explain, to give a God story, really. I mean, I think much of media today is pretty corrupt, but I think there can be good ways of telling good stories, and I've seen those.
Absolutely. Well, Dr. Johnson, we really appreciate your time today, spending some time talking with us about Native American culture, so that families and parents and children can have a better understanding. But I think all of us have gained a better understanding. So we appreciate your time. Thanks for being with us today.
Oh, you're most welcome. God bless.
Thank you. Blessings to you as well, and all that is going on with Lutheran Indian Ministries. And tomorrow on Faith and Family, we'll be talking with Dr. John Loom about Middle Eastern culture. So please join us for that conversation, as I'm sure it will be enlightening and engaging. Stick around for Moments of Assurance right here on Worldwide KFUO, the messenger of good news.